Welcome to Under the Abbey Stand. I'm Jack Swindlehurst, and coming up today, we're going to look back at an amazing day down at Pompey, look forward to welcoming Fleetwood Town to the Abbey, and we'll hear from our sideline captain too. Joining me today are Julian Roberts. Hello.
Hello, mate. It's nice to see you. It's been a while. I've just about recovered from yesterday, so I'm on top form for this.
Good job. And Tom Walker, how are you?
Yeah, fantastic.
Tom hasn't recovered yet.
So, first things first then. Julian, how good was yesterday at Pompey? Kind of, sum it up for us.
It's hard to sum up, I think. It's one of them, unfortunately, anyone I think who wasn't there just missed out on an absolute classic away. It's right up there for me with the ones that I've done, your Orient 3-1, Notts County both times, the 1-0 and the 2-1. It was just sensational. And a lot of it's got to do with, obviously, the result last week, the sort of wider context of being in League One and it being probably the biggest, well, definitely the biggest away we've done so far, because aside from Accrington and then Plymouth was on a Tuesday. But, I mean, it's such a big ground and, like, it's such a imposing place to go, I'd say, in the sense that they're a big club, Pompey, and there's no point messing around with that. But little old Cambridge just going down to Pompey, pinching all 3 points. You absolutely love it. And it was just, it's sort of as close to a perfect performance as I've seen under Bonner, I would say. He got everything absolutely spot on. And the only negative I can take from it is that that they scored. And they scored from probably a lapse of concentration, just didn't quite clear the ball properly. And then a brilliant finish as well. We restricted them to so little, and I'm sure we'll go into all the reasons why. But as a general day out, it was absolutely unbelievable.
Yeah, absolutely. It was great to see Cambridge bring all 3 points back. Not many people expecting that result, I don't think, with the history before. And yeah, as you say, it being one of our first big away games this season.
And it's also the first time we've ever beaten them at Fratton Park, I think. I mean, we've definitely beaten them once in our history, which we spoke about last week. So, and that was in 1978. So, like, the recent form had everything pointing against us in terms of the matchup. So, just to add that element onto it as well, it's just sensational.
Absolutely. So, it's good to see. Tom, how did you find it down there yesterday?
Yeah, very similar. We spoke last week about, you know, how we sort of thought the game might play out down there. And I think I said that it was a bit of a free hit almost, sort of going away. And, you know, if we can kind of get anything, then obviously it's a bit of a bonus. I would have expected that Portsmouth would have completely controlled the game, sort of, and won fairly comfortably. And it was pretty much the exact reverse of that. It was a bit surreal, actually, watching us play like that away at Portsmouth and just essentially dominating the game, completely controlled everything. I think it's also, we scored at such good times in the game, I think, as well. Obviously, Ironside's goal was sort of not too long before half-time. And the second goal, which is obviously a brilliant goal, Ryan Neal, of all people, who's getting a bit of a knack for this, sort of long-range goals away from home at difficult places to go, etc. But that came at the end of a spell where we'd sort of really been on top, and you feel that if we hadn't scored at those times, the sort of momentum of the game could really easily get away from you. But it was superbly managed by Bonner. Like Julian said, kind of got everything spot on. I'd maybe say that taking Ironside off just changed the momentum of the game a little bit. But, that aside, it was a pretty sort of perfect game plan. It was just really well executed. Like, you can go throughout the team. Like, if you try and pick out a man of the match, you kind of feel harsh sort of leaving people out of the discussion. Like, I mean, the centre-halves yesterday were ridiculously good. Jones and Masterson, like, they were, brilliant. You know, obviously, Ironside does what he does up front. Mitov had a fantastic game as well, and that's probably one that I can chalk as one that I think I got wrong about Mitov. I wasn't absolutely certain if he'd be kind of at the right level for, obviously for this season, but it was a really brave performance for him. It felt like he was always coming out to sort of, claim crosses. It just showed, real confidence. But yeah, it was a really good day out, and one that I'm sure we'll talk about for a little while.
I think it's also important to mention that for anyone who didn't watch the game, anyone listening who didn't get a chance to actually watch it, like, it wasn't a smash and grab away victory. They dominated the ball, sure. If you look at the possession stats, they did, but it was all in front of us. Like, it was completely contained. It worked. The game plan worked perfectly. We had the same amount of shots as them, and we had double the amount of shots on target. Like, we were good. We were more than good for a bigger win than that. And it was, it was just spot on, honestly, every aspect of it.
Yeah, it's interesting to hear that. And yeah, I think we're expecting these games to kind of be that kind of smash and grab. But Cambridge have come out this season primarily on the front foot and already beating, you know, Bolton, Burton before this game and, you know, putting out a statement of intent there. And you touched on how well Mark Bonner had done yesterday, you know, managing that team. What do we think about the formation and the way that Cambridge set up yesterday? How do we think that what impacted the game? And do we think that's how Cambridge are going to get set up going forward?
Yeah, I think so. I guess it's something we sort of anticipated after the Lincoln game, that they probably obviously revert to what worked kind of so well before that. And yeah, I think in those sorts of games, if obviously the players do their job, it becomes very, very difficult to sort of beat us, basically. It was quite noticeable that we were very, very happy for them to sort of play it out wide. Very, very, very good players on the wing. Curtis, I think, obviously got the goal. Harness on the other one, decent fullbacks at this level as well, sort of making those overlapping runs. But we're more than happy for them just to sort of play it out wide, show them out wide, and then all they can really do is cross it in. And, when you've got defenders like Jones and sort of Marsden, you're always fairly confident that you can just kind of soak that up, basically. It was a really good performance, very similar to the Bolton game in quite a lot of respects, to be honest, that we were more than happy just to kind of sit off and just say, what can you do, basically? And obviously the answer was not a lot, to be honest.
Just on the formation, it was the same setup as Plymouth, right? Back in a couple of weeks ago, at the start of August. And with that five, sort of flat five in the middle. And it's sort of a formation you can only play, that you can't really fit Wes into, because he doesn't quite do what either wingers do, Brophy or Tracy, in terms of steaming up and down the flank constantly. And he plays a little bit more advanced than all three of the centre mids were playing yesterday, really trying to make it like a congested middle of the park. But what I think is interesting about is I've seen a lot of people on Twitter debating the one up top or two up top. Obviously, we started with two up top against Lincoln, and Bonner would have probably been the first to say that he'd got that wrong in that specific game. But something I think we've spoken about so many times already is, you are said, Jack, do you think it's something that we'll see permanently going forward? And I don't think it is, personally, because I think Bonner really does approach every game by its own merit and what's the best way to beat that opponent. And he got, as we've said a million times now, he got it absolutely spot on yesterday. And there will be other games that Wes can't play. I mean, he's picked up an injury yesterday, he mentioned afterwards. And actually, funnily enough, on the way to Pompey yesterday, I was saying, God, isn't it amazing that Wes barely been injured since he's been here as a 39-year-old, obviously. That was bound to happen after I'd said that. But there's going to be games that we need to find a way of getting results without Wes being our chief creative player. And this is just one option that Bonner can employ. I don't think I would rule out seeing two up top at some point in the next few weeks, maybe. And I'm not saying that that's the right thing to do or the wrong thing to do, but I think what's so impressive is just the versatility that Bonner's got in his setup here. And the players that obviously he signed to use for all these different systems. Yesterday, I mean, to a man, it was absolutely sensational, the performance. And I think Tom mentioned Jones and Masterson there, but I wanted to also, if we're going to go on to a few of the players, I thought Jack Iredale had an unbelievable game yesterday. There was a moment in the first half where they break from us and it's like 3-on-3, I think. And I can't remember which one of their players, it might have been their striker, Harrison, I think, was just pulling off about the penalty spot area, ready to pull the trigger. And Jack Iredale steams in with his perfectly timed challenge. And it just sort of set the tone for the afternoon, not just the desire and the commitment, but just getting absolutely every, like, interception, every tackle, every pass, just perfect. And I just wanted to have a bit of a shout out for him. But I'm sure there's loads of other players that we could come on to.
Yeah, I'll probably pick out Adam May as one to mention if we are going to go sort of individual performances. And like I mentioned earlier, we can literally take each and every player that got on the pitch and basically probably make a fairly decent argument for them being man of the match, such as the sort of quality of the performance. But May, I guess, a bit like O'Neill in some ways. Obviously, someone who hasn't necessarily been sort of universally rated by our fans, but. He's very, very good. I think he's quite a calm player. I think he just keeps the ball ticking over quite nicely and does the sort of simple things quite well. A number of times I seem to recall he was sort of setting away Tracy down the right hand side, helping sort of relieve pressure with quite sort of precise passing. So it was a really good performance from May. And, you know, obviously speaking of O'Neill, clearly, you know, again, someone who's had, you know, throughout his time here, some criticisms and praise, but a lot of people have been, I think, fairly on the fence about him the whole time. But I think particularly in the three, he is quite a capable player at this level. I think he's shown that. I think he comes unstuck against sort of better teams when it's just him and one other. I think there's a bit too much pressure on his sort of mobility. Whereas when obviously he plays in a three, he can kind of do the things that he's kind of best at, which I guess similar to Mage is just kind of keeping the play linked, keeping things ticking over. And yeah, I'm sure there's others that we can talk about and mention, but I think particularly I'll probably pick those two out as well as obviously the guys that Julian just mentioned there.
I think it's such a good point to mention Adam May. Let's also, just while we're here talking about players, let's talk about Big Joe, because that goal was right in front of the away end. I mean, shades of Rory McCauley at Luton. It was such a perfect goal to celebrate because he waited about a year before. Like, he headed it. I went out, got a sausage roll, came back, and then the ball dropped in the net. Like, it was unbelievable. Unbelievable finish. But, I mean, is that his fifth this season now so far? Someone correct me if I'm wrong. Fifth in League One.
Yeah.
Does that make him joint top scorer with Stockton? Or is he out there by himself?
I think he's joint top scorer. But either way, it's kind of incredible to see, because we were so reliant on Paul Mullen last year that Joe almost took a backseat. We gave him his credit, but now he's front and centre now.
Yeah, like it's easy to, yeah, like Mullen's goal is obviously one of the most important aspects in us getting promoted. But if you'd have put Mullen's penalties onto Ironside, his figures would have looked even more impressive than they already were. And it only took watching United a couple of times to realise how important Ironside was to Mullen scoring those goals. And he's just taken it like a taken to League One and being the main man, like a duck to water. And he's going to score a lot more goals this season, I think.
Yeah, I think he's obviously on course again to have a pretty decent goal return. I feel a bit sorry for him, to be honest, because last season he had, you know, by anyone's standards, a pretty decent year. It was obviously just overshadowed a bit by just like ridiculous goal scoring numbers from Mullen, obviously. But he basically just kind of picked up where he left off from obviously last season. But I wonder whether he's you know, kind of felt a bit of the pressure to sort of replace those goals from Mullen. And I guess if there was one, I don't know, maybe slight criticism that you could have made of Ironside last season, he's a very, very effective target man. But, and you know, his goal scoring record was, you know, pretty good. But is he capable of being the sort of main man and taking it from that pretty good level to something which, you know, is like 20 or 25 goals a season? And the fact that he's on course to step up into League One and do that, I think it's the first time he's ever played at this level. He's obviously testament to him, but I think he's as important defensively as he is going forward, to be fair.
That's a really good point, actually. Yeah, you mentioned earlier about Smith coming on for him, and you're saying you weren't sure about that decision. Do you think that was that more to do with, obviously, we were defending a one goal lead at that stage, that what Ironside does at the back is just as important to the team as arguably what he does going forward?
Yeah, I mean, I think particularly in those sorts of games, it's obviously a bit of a cliche that gets trotted out, but you do defend from the front. And obviously the way that he plays is quite central to that, I think, which is obviously strange for a sort of striker. But yeah, I think he's kind of as useful in those situations in terms of what he can do with, like, breaking up the play, winning things in the air, winning free kicks. There's obviously anything that he does sort of going forward. And I mean, his header yesterday, it definitely had shades of McCauley. And to be fair, another assist for Williams. He's picking up a few of those down the right hand side, and you know, we talked again about after the Lincoln game. Was it the system? Was it sort of his own performances that maybe caused what happened, you know, last week? But again, you know, just kind of going off topic a bit again onto individual performances, Williams was very good as well. So really, really good.
Yeah, incredibly positive words from the podcast, which some listeners won't be used to, but it's definitely a recurring theme. And after, you know, seven games at this level, to be on 11 points, we've scored 10 goals. And yeah, we've conceded 10, but I mean, five of them came in one game. So Cambridge United have to be pleased with being in 13th place at the moment. It's going to be interesting going forward. And next up is Fleetwood Town. We welcome them to the Abbey, and Julian caught up with Ben from COD's Vlogs to preview the game.
Right, Youth fans, I'm joined by Ben from COD's Vlogs to help us do a preview of the big Fleetwood game next week. Thanks very much for joining us, mate. I suppose first question is, what's the mood amongst Fleetwood fans at the start of the season? How reflect on your start? How do you think you've done?
I think when you look at it, Fleetwood fans came into this season and for the once in a long time, we weren't expecting anything big because we didn't spend big and the caliber of players had gone down a notch. And it was always going to be a difficult start with, I'd said Wigan and Fleetwood had the toughest games to start the season. When Fleetwood have Portsmouth at home, who just missed out on the playoffs on the last day last year. Then they go to Lincoln, who got to the playoff final. Then they have Sheffield Wednesday away from home. You're not going to get many tougher starts than that. And we got 0 points. I think we deserve more. Possibly got one or two out of each get out of, you know, the three games. Then we played Cheltenham at home, someone that you came up with last season. It was a great win. And you could see them 2-1 up. These guys let in the last kick of the game was scored. And it was just a huge relief to get those points on the board for a young side as well. And then we went to Plymouth, got a nice point. Then we were off for 2 weeks. And I think it helped us because we brought in a couple of players to bed in. And then to go to Rotherham last week to be, you know, 2-1 down at half-time to come out and win 4-2 against Rotherham. It felt like they had 8 or 9 men on the pitch. It was so surreal. And to go to a place that don't concede many goals, they're going to be up there. They pride themselves on winning games at the New York Stadium. And the mood has kind of gone from really down there to upright where the skies are in the last few games. And by a margin of football can do that for you.
What's the sort of expectation for the season? Is it sort of consolidate, just stay up? Is it sort of aim a little bit of a push at the playoffs?
Yeah, I think recently Fleetwood's target has been to go up, but Fleetwood aren't stupid. I think they've looked at the league this year, which they always do, and they thought, should we throw it at it? Should we put the money at it? But then had a look, and I reckon League One's a very strange year this year. There's about 11 teams that could go up, and there's about 8 teams that could go down. I reckon Fleetwood are in the other 5 teams, in my opinion. We could go down, but I think the squad is a little bit too good to go down. It could do, but I reckon we'll be okay. I think the ambition has to be to be better than last year. We went on an awful run and ended okay, but not scoring many goals. I just want us to be okay to watch and considered it from last year. So anywhere above 16, 17, top 12 would be an absolute dream. But anywhere between 12 and 15 will be over the moon with.
And your summer business, are you happy with what you did over the summer? I saw you picked up Callum Morton on loan, and there was a rumour flying around at one point that we might pick him up. And I remember United fans, we were quite excited about that. Has he started well? Has your business been good?
Yeah, he started quite well, in my opinion, mate. I think the first few games, he looked a bit lightweight and didn't want to go up for an header and looked a bit timid. And I think you saw him at Northampton in League Two and he looked to do well. I think he got, 4 or 5 goals in 12 games there, didn't he? And scored in the playoff final. And everyone thought, right, League One level now. And would he go back to Northampton? He obviously went to Lincoln and was dampened by injury. He scored against Fleetwood last year. And I thought, you know, something, he looks like a player that can hold the ball up. He's tall. He can run the channels. He's quite athletic. And he didn't start well, but he scored a hat-trick against Leicester's under-21s in the Pizza Cup, the Leasing Cup, whatever you want to call it. And normally don't take much notice of those games, but it's what it is good for. It's good to get play minutes into plays and get the confidence. Against Rotherham, no word of lie, he was a different player. He ran Rotherham's defence ragged. You know, Wood, Ayikwe and Harding are a very good, experienced, knowledgeable back three. And to do that to them and force them into subs tells you a lot. He scored a very good goal. He took it well. And, you know, 4 goals in, I think it's 2 games now, is a great return. So hopefully he can, you know, return. But tell you what, mate, you'll be a bit confused when we play. We've got about 6 gingers on the pitch. You've got Max Clark, Jed Garner, Callum Camps,
Brad Halliday.
Morton, Brad Halliday. He is injured for the season.
Oh, we've got the season.
Yeah, so that there, he got injured against Sheffield Wednesday. So the funny thing is, Sheffield Wednesday gets injured. Obviously, we bring Darnell in for the next game, who plays right of a back three, but also can play right back. He then gets injured in his third game against Rotherham, and there's rumours going around that we're signing Conor McLaughlin. Is it true? I'm not quite sure. You know, we've had him before, played 200 games for us, so let's just see. But we've not had the luck with the injuries this year in that position.
So moving on to the big game on Saturday at the Abbey, you mentioned just before we started recording that you don't like playing sort of the other smaller teams in the division. You prefer going to the big boys. Is that, I know it's a bit too early to call it a six-pointer, but is there a lot of expectation to pick up some points at the Abbey, I'm assuming, in your fan base?
I'm not sure. I think Cambridge away is a very tough place to go. You know, you've started very well there. You know, I think you've won two of your first four games and you've drawn one, and you've not been beaten, you know, no slouches. You know, you beat Bolton, you got a good point against Oxford. You know, you've got goals in your side. You know, Mullen left. But I do think, in a way, that's a good news for you, because you're not that one-man team that everyone called. You know, Joe Ironside scored 14 goals last year. Nobody was mentioning him. He started this year very well. You know, Wes Houlihan is, you know, what, 39? He'll still be providing assists at 69. He's, you know, that good. And, you know, you got an experienced back four. I like Lloyd Jones as well. So, you know, you've got quality all around. I like your goalkeeper as well. I think he's one of the best in the division. So, you know, Mark Bonner done a very good job. And I think it's horrible to say we've got to go and win at Cambridge, because you'll be thinking the same about Fleetwood as well. So I reckon if we can get anything, I'll be over the moon. But I think it's a must-not-lose game, because it's one of those types that you want to pick up points and keep momentum, because you want to kind of go into the bigger games with free hit today. Like, we went into Rotherham, we're getting four from the two. We could go into Rotherham suddenly going, free hit today. But if we didn't get those, it'd be like, ooh, we could come out of these with 0 points.
Yeah, I think it's going to be quite an interesting game for that reason, because I think that's exactly how we're thinking about it, that it's a must not lose. Like, especially we've got by the time this goes out, we'll have already played Portsmouth, so we're sort of, it's the Fleetwood game is the first of a sort of easier run in inverted commas, so it's one of them where you just want to pick up a bit of momentum. So we've already talked about Morton. Who are the other players to watch for United fans?
I think you've got to have a look at Callum Camps, you know, number 10. You know, he scored, what, 40, 50 goals in this division from, you know, an attacking midfield role. First half of last year, everything he hit turned to gold. He was scoring goal after goal. Then he only scored, I think, 2 in 34. He's a confidence player, but he seems back to his best. He got a goal and 2 assists. One of his assists was kind of a block shot that run into someone. But you know what I mean? He still helped set up 3 of the 4 goals. So, you know, he looks back to his best and, you know, getting on the score sheet. I think you've also got to look for, you know, the likes of Alex Cairns in goal. I think he's been terrific this year, even though he's not got that clean sheet yet. Tom Clark, experienced at this level. I would have said Jaden Morris, a young winger that we've got, but unfortunately seems to be out for a long period of time. It's just, you know, we've been very dampened by injuries in the first half of the season.
And final question, big one. What's your prediction?
I'm going to go for a draw, because I think it's going to be a very tough game. I think we'll both score. I'll go 1-1. I think it'll be a tight game with two tight defences, and, you know, both sides will have a go. Looking forward to visiting the Abbey. I'll go 1-1. Ironside to score for you. Of course, Wes Houlihan assist. And I'll go Morton, just for the fact you nearly signed. Morton, last-minute equaliser. Yeah. Just to put a dent in you.
Class, Ben. Thank you very much, mate. Best of luck for the season.
No worries, mate.
So Ben, sitting on the fence there, he's going for a draw, quite detailed in his prediction. And it'll certainly be interesting to go and see how Fleetwood turn out for this game. Julian, what's your opinion? How do you think this game's going to go?
Yeah, I thought Ben was very, very kind to us as well. He's saying the Abbey's a difficult place to go, and you know, obviously highlighted, done his research. He knew his stuff about us. So it's coming from a good place, and hopefully there's a few other opposition fans and teams that aren't so comfortable with coming to the Abbey. And I think something that he said there is, it's a must not lose game for Fleetwood, and I still think that's, even regardless of the Pompey result, I think that's still the case for us. So I'd probably agree with his draw prediction. In general, though, I think there's a real opportunity here with the next couple of games. So obviously Fleetwood and then Gillingham on the Tuesday after. It's something that we spoke about with Pompey on the way there is Bonner. Under Bonner, we've only lost two games in a row one time, which was Stevenage and Harrogate at the end of last season. So something he's always done incredibly well is bounce back from big defeats. And I think probably the best example might be the Exeter game at the end of last season. I mean, there's probably a few examples that you can pull, but losing 4-1 at home to Exeter on that. And at the time, I think Morecambe still had loads of games in hand. So there was a real Bolton winning every game in front of them. So that was a bit of a blow possibly to our chances, especially if you go on a losing run. So, and then I think we beat Orient on the Tuesday after that, or it might have been Newport. I can't remember which way around. But anyway, we bounced back from it. And that's something that Bonner's teams have shown. But what I think the opportunity is here now is taking that sort of surprise, or like that, you know, the Pompey and Lincoln games aren't the sorts of games where we're going to be expected to get points from if we want to stay up. It's more games like Fleetwood and Gillingham. So I think there's such an opportunity here to really make our mark on this sort of relegation battle, if you want to call it that, or like the teams tipped for relegation and just pick up some really, really decent points. So I'd agree with Ben that it's a must not lose. But I also think there's a really good opportunity to win, especially at the Abbey. So I'm going to go for a 2-1 Cambridge win, if you want my prediction.
Yeah, I was just going to say similar things, really. I mean, to be honest, I think it's a good point to make that these next two league games are, you know, a bit of an opportunity, realistically, because, you know, without trying to get too ahead of myself, if obviously we win both, even at this sort of stage, I'm still obviously quite early days. I think by the time if we've obviously played both these games, we'll still only have played like 9 times this season. But even after that amount of games, like, you're already starting to put a bit of a sort of daylight really between yourselves and obviously the bottom four. And you know, obviously, regardless of sort of how many times we go away and beat the sort of top-ranked teams in the league, I don't think there'll be too many people who expect us to turn this into another, you know, sort of promotion charge. But so it's obviously a focus.
He said it. Tom said it. It's happening now. Playoffs.
Yeah, don't quote me on that. But having said that, like, the focus has to be on putting as much space between us and the bottom four as possible. And I think probably Gillingham and Fleetwood are going to be the sort of teams that we're going to be competing against for that, I think. And if we can beat them quite comprehensively and quite comfortably, I think that'll probably, it sounds weird coming off the back of, you know, a win away at Portsmouth, but I still think there's a bit of a, maybe a bit of a feeling that we're not quite at the right level in some ways, that we are, like, you know, sort of plucky team, sort of you know, we'll do really well to stay up. But if we can beat these sort of teams, like, you know, Fleetwood and obviously like Gillingham at home fairly convincingly, then I think that probably just shows the progression we made, and we're now basically a very capable League One team, and we're absolutely here by right rather than because we've been plucked our hat or whatever. So yeah, looking forward to it. I'm again, quite interested to see how we set up. It's probably going to be a bit more ambitious than the sort of setup that we had at Portsmouth, which was obviously, you know, basically just soak up a lot of pressure. I think we'll probably be quite keen to control the game by what we do rather than our shape. But yeah, it's a really good opportunity to get a couple of wins on the board coming up.
I wouldn't be surprised if we saw a bit of Jack Lancaster this weekend, maybe, if Wes is still out in that creative role behind Joe. I think an important thing to say about Fleetwood, by the way, is, I was just looking at their results now, their like recent few results, like, they're no mugs. Like, obviously, I think it is one of those games that you'd look at a fixture list and go, okay, we can target getting some points there for sure. And we should have an expectation of getting points regardless of the result against Pompey. But if you look at it, I mean, they got a point against Sunderland yesterday. They beat Rotherham quite handsomely the week before that. And then they managed a point against Plymouth and beat Cheltenham at home before that, after what was a very, very tough start, as Ben mentioned in that interview. So I just feel like they're not a team to be underestimated in terms of what they can, the potential that they've got. But at home, you would still definitely want to be targeting some points from this fixture, I think. So I hope we do that, to be honest. I hope we set up to try and win the game personally, which sounds like an obvious thing to say, but I'm sure you know what I mean. I mean, fingers crossed.
Certainly interesting to see another good day out at the Abbey, and then again the following Tuesday too. There is a game this Tuesday, but we don't really talk about that competition. So hopefully Cambridge just operate a bit more rotation this week. Thank you, lads, for this pocket-sized podcast. Julian Roberts, thank you.
Nice one, mate. I'll see you soon.
Tom Walker, thank you.
Yeah, good to be back again. Cheers, man.
And a great way to end a podcast is with our beloved, slightly maligned club captain, Greg Taylor, and Julian caught up with him.
Well, thanks very much for joining us, Greg. It's been a couple of years since we last spoke. Must have been 3 years ago. A lot's changed since then.
Yeah, a lot's changed. Yeah, thanks for having me on. It's good to kind of break up my day. So, yeah, very happy to come on and speak to you guys.
Yeah, yeah, pleasure to have you again, mate. Before, we just wanted to catch up on like your injury and everything, and obviously pretty devastating start to the season for you. But just to start with something positive, when I texted you asking if you could come on the pod, I just scrolled up and saw the text we'd sent each other on the night of the 8th of May. I'm sure you probably don't even remember it. I mean, I have absolutely no memory of texting you because I woke up in the morning, looked over, I saw an unread message from Greg Taylor. What have I done? But you must have got thousands of messages. What was that like that night like?
It was crazy. I do remember like there was a period in the night, and I think I was trying to just kind of focus on being present in the moment and enjoying it with all the lads. And then after like a couple of hours and after a few beers and things like that, I just kind of took myself away for 10, 15 minutes and just to reply to everyone. And yeah, I saw you come through. So yeah, no, it was nice. And yeah, that night was brilliant. I think it's one of the best nights after obviously the game that I've had in my career. So yeah, that was brilliant.
Unbelievable. It's a shame that there couldn't have been fans in that day. It would have been extra special having everyone in, but it was sort of unique, wasn't it? All them celebrations on the turnstile and that, it was like, yeah, it won't be repeated.
Yeah, it was crazy, I think, because like we were on the pitch and Andy Beattie's the secretary, and he's the kind of the COVID guy, and he was saying, yeah. you can't go out there. And someone just said, listen, mate, if you go over there, like everyone's just going to go over there. So I just kind of run over to the fence. Yeah. And you know, that was brilliant. And
Were you the first one up?
I jumped up onto the gate. Yeah. So I was the first one. I didn't really fancy jumping on top of the roof because I didn't know how safe that was. But after it took like 20 of the lads, I thought, yeah, I'll make it over there. But no, that was, I think it was important for us and for the fans to kind of have that. So yeah, I thought that was class.
Yeah, it was class. What an evening. So with the start of this season, obviously your injury against Plymouth, what actually happened? It seemed like a bit of a sort of innocuous challenge. It looked like you just sort of went up for a header and came down and then that was it.
That's pretty much it, if I'm honest. It was like the most nothing moment in the game. Something that I've done hundreds of times and not really batted an eyelid about it. It was just I think the ball was just coming up to the forward, and I just kind of half nicked to the side and just nodded it behind him, but like just obviously away from him, and he was still in the air. So as I've landed on my right foot, and I landed like a little bit awkwardly. So as I've tried to move, he's kind of come down on like the side of my shin, and really my ankle's just kind of buckled underneath, and I heard the noise that I heard the snap, so I knew exactly what happened because I've heard it before when I did the injury to this ankle five or six years ago now. So I know exactly what that noise is. Yeah, initial thoughts, I thought I was just being a bit of a fanny, and I think it's just my natural reaction, just get up. But yeah, the minute I kind of stood up, and yeah, just did not feel great at all. So yeah, that was it done, and yeah, it's so, pretty sore.
Is this one worse than the last time you did it? Is this one's a fracture, right? Or is this one a clean break? It's a fracture.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose I don't really know too much of the difference between the two. But yeah, I know it's a break. The other one was a little bit more complicated 5 or 6 years ago because it was a bit nasty with ligaments and stuff like that. So good news, no ligament damage, just break. So I'd like to think that will heal quicker. But yeah, just obviously because it's on the same ankle, it just becomes a little bit more trickier.
Yeah, yeah. So what's the sort of time scale like in terms of like walking, running, training, playing? Have you got an aim?
It's hard. I think it's because it's quite a unique injury. There's not really too many, like, it hasn't happened before. So it's not like it's a really common injury where you can say, right, after this step, you're there. And then by, I don't know, X amount of months, you're back playing. So it's quite difficult in that sense. But like the surgeon's given me, so I'm not walking at the minute, but in 2 weeks, I'll put a little bit of weight on it. So 4 weeks after the operation, I'll be walking in the boot and driving. So that's massive. But yeah, then after that, it's a case of just building the bone strength and getting the muscle strength back and kind of just taking my time with it. I don't really want to rush and cause issues along the way. So I think after Christmas is probably realistic. How long after Christmas, I don't know. It just depends kind of how things progress. But I mean, I do everything as much as I can. Everything within my capabilities, I'm doing it to the full max. So yeah, I'm confident. We've got a good medical team, so I'm sure they'll look after me.
It must be frustrating though, as like a professional athlete, to not to suddenly be like, well, no, you can't get off the sofa for a few months. I mean, that's like a dream for me, but I'm not a professional athlete, so it's like it's very different.
Yeah, I think I'm living other people's dreams of just like being paid and sitting on the sofa. Yeah, it's really hard. I'm quite active anyway. Like even say for example in the lockdown and stuff like that, I was out on my bike and doing like keeping up with the exercise and stuff. So it's tough to go from training every day to now literally being sat and stuck in the house. So yeah, it's been tough. Lucky my missus has been looking after me and doing everything for me. So I'm quite lucky with that.
Make the most of them dinners getting brought to you on the sofa while you can.
Oh, everything, breakfast, lunch, dinner, everything. Everything's in Tupperware boxes.
It's all ready to go.
It's tough. But yeah, it's just, I think once I get this kind of 4 weeks out of the way, it sounds like a long time, but I mean, I've already done a month. So once I can drive and get out, I can get back in with the lads and try and have a kind of input, and that's my main focus really.
I was going to say, I saw a photo of you down at the training ground. Was it nice to be back on Clare College and seeing everyone and stuff, like back in the environment?
Yeah, I think that was really big for me to kind of get out the house and see all the lads, because it was the first time I'd seen anyone in a long time. And it's weird because you go from being a big part of it and then you just kind of get not cast to the side, but that's just kind of what happens when you're at home and you're not around the lads. So you just don't really feel part of it. So yeah, it was brilliant to go in and see all the lads, have a bit of banter and just watch training really. It was just nice.
Yeah. Yeah. Just watch a bit of Wes Houlihan. It's not bad, is it?
Brilliant.
No, I was going to ask though, just on this sort of like being a professional athlete and like having an injury. I remember a few years ago when Barry Corr got injured, one of the times he got injured, he was out for quite a long time with his knee. I remember him doing an interview with, might have been the Cambridge News or someone, saying how he was like training by himself in the park and stuff because he was finding it so tough, like mentally, just with the injury and stuff. Is that something that the club like put stuff in place to make sure that you're doing all right in that sense as well, like from a mental health side of things?
I've had everybody ring me on different days throughout the week, so that's quite nice, like whether it's Bonds or Gary Waddock and a few of the boys and even like the club doctor and stuff. So they all use different days to ring me and just keep in touch and see how I'm doing, which is good. Like really there's not a lot I can do. Like I find myself just going into my garage. I've got like a few like weights and stuff like that in there, so at the minute I can't do too much. But just even if that I've got that 45 minutes or an hour just trying to do something to myself, just to try and keep myself busy, keep myself active. And I mean, everything that I can do now is going to be a bonus for when I'm on my feet. So I think it's just trying to keep busy and active really.
Just keep positive, isn't it? Are you managing to watch the games on iFollow?
I'm watching the games, which to be honest is so hard. Especially last week when I get my cup of tea, sit down and 30 seconds there's a goal.
That's first 30 seconds, 1-0 down, that's weird.
I mean, I was probably shouting at the lads as much as you guys. It's hard. It's hard to watch, but like also it's good to kind of have that to be able to watch, because I mean, in other kind of years, we haven't had that. So I mean, it's good to watch it while it's at home, but yeah, I need to be getting into the games pretty soon. Yeah.
Was there a part of you that was watching Saturday's game, watching Anthony Scully absolutely tear us apart and thought, God, I've dodged a bullet there, actually. It's not a bad one to miss.
No, not at all. Like, to be honest, I was kind of admiring it. Like, it was a great performance from him. I thought he was like kind of their standout player, to be honest. He caused a lot of problems.
Yeah. I mean, he's a quality player. What's the mood in general like with the squad at the moment? Looking like pre-season, sort of first few months, like, how's everyone feeling about the season?
I think it was good. Yeah, it was really good. Coming back, obviously, kind of coming off the high of the season before, everyone was kind of really excited to kind of step up and kind of carry that on. Obviously, people leave and new people come in. And what I will say about the squad is it's so good. I think it's probably one of the best squads for a new sign-in to come into. You kind of just in the group like instantly. There's no problem. Like, you could, the environment's there to be comfortable as soon as you walk through the door. And I think that just kind of helps when you're playing, if you're comfortable with all the lads and stuff. So yeah, everyone was excited. Everyone they're more than confident to feel like we can do the job and stay up and have a real good go at it.
Is that an environment that Bonds creates, just making sure, like, signing the right sort of individuals so that there's no, like, clashes and it's just, like, a really easy environment to walk into?
Yeah, he's been brilliant at doing that to me. I think that's probably one of his strengths of kind of his managerial style. He just kind of got rid of the typical manager rubbish of just, like, coming in and being moody or aggressive. And he just comes in and creates an environment for everybody to enjoy themselves and know their job and get on with it. Like, there's just no excuses.
So he's no Richard Money. I know what you're saying.
I didn't say anything.
I read between the lines, mate. Don't worry. Right, last question, right? And this is something I'm sure you've been asked about for the past couple of seasons, and I think you have actually spoke about it on the radio before. What is it like to play with Wes Hoolihan?
It's a dream, honestly. I mean, I have the best seat in the house when I'm playing because I can give him the ball and watch it. And I just find myself commentating or laughing in the game sometimes with some of the things he does. He's a special player. And
Is he even better in training when he's got sort of no pressure on him and he's like trying things out?
Yeah, the stuff you see on a match day is brilliant, like, because it's harder to do it in a game kind of situation because there's more pressure and more risk. So, but the stuff he does in training is incredible. Like, you can't get near him. You just can't get near him. And if you do, you're at risk of getting embarrassed. So, it's so good. And we're just kind of lucky to have him, really. And he's the nicest guy ever.
Yeah. And he still cares. Well, it looks like from the, like, the, just his, like, sort of hunger and how much effort he puts into games still. You'd think for a 39-year-old, like, I've watched a few that dropped down to this level. I remember watching Edgar Davids when he was playing for Barnet.
Yeah.
I remember thinking. And I mean, that was weird enough, but, like, it's just one of them things when you see players drop down a lot of levels, you often expect that maybe they've lost that sort of energy a little bit. But with Wes, like, he's sprinting after everything and he looks like a 29-year-old. It's mad.
Honestly, some days in training, like, if he's had a few days off the game on Saturday and he comes and say the Thursday or whatever, he's at it on the Thursday. And you kind of know he is as well. He's chasing after every ball. And I think it's good because it kind of shows at his age, he's still doing it and kind of demanding it off people. Like, why can't the younger boys be doing it? There's no excuse. Yeah. Like, if he's out there running and doing it, nobody can say anything. So, he's still got that and he still lets everybody know when people aren't doing what they should do.
Yeah, special player. Well, hopefully he's around for many more years to come. Thanks very much for this, Greg. Get well soon and hopefully see you back out there very soon.
Thanks, mate. Appreciate it. Glad to be on.